Welcome to Health System CIO's interview with Blaine Hebert, VP and CISO at Yuma Regional Medical Center. I'm Anthony Guerra, founder and editor-in-chief. Blaine, thanks for joining me.
Great to be here, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
All right, good. Looking forward to having a fun chat. So you want to start off, Blaine, by telling me about your organization and your role?
Sure. So I'm the VP and CISO at Yuma Regional Medical Center in Yuma, Arizona. I've been there approximately a year now. We're a relatively medium-sized hospital, not-for-profit, and just a little 400 beds. Mm-hmm. So pretty small cyber team. I've got four direct reports that fall underneath me. So I'm the first CISO that Yuma Regional has had. Prior to that, they had some virtual CISOs that worked supporting the organization. And so we're currently at one hospital system there. Really the only regional medical center between San Diego and Phoenix. So quite a large population there that we support. So that's it in a nutshell, Anthony.
All right. Very good. I'm going to start out sort of with an open-ended question and just see what's on your mind. What are some of the trends you're watching, things you're working on or trends you're watching? Just what's top of mind right now?
Well, I don't think there's a CISO in our industry that doesn't lose sleep over ransomware. That's probably the number one ticket item. And then AI is really banging its head in the forefront right now. So we're trying to get our arms around some governance structure for AI and doing some good things there. And for me, really, first and foremost for me is just, I'm making sure that we're doing the standards and the foundations right at Yuma Regional. I think there's such a big, there's this thing in healthcare or probably other industry verticals as well, that is to go over the new shiny thing in cyber. And I think we miss the boat a lot if we don't just stick to the foundational issues. And it's so evident now that the Change Healthcare thing has came out and it showed that MFA wasn't enabled on Citrix, which is, probably a basic building block for your externally facing systems. So for us, we're concentrating on the basics right now. Like I said, we have a small team. And so I've got some two new of my analysts are relatively new. So, not only training them, but getting the organization just to continue to work day in and day out, doing the basic stuff and kind of doing things in layered security there.
Very good. So sort of cyber hygiene, blocking and tackling, these are some of the phrases that we use to talk about getting the basics right. So let's talk real quickly about the Change thing. It's stunning, right? But it happens. It's got to happen for a reason. You don't assume that they had, you would have to assume that they had a, and I don't know the CISO's name, but let's assume that individual was qualified, right? I mean, this is a big, big, big company. So this is a qualified person who probably was doing their best, had a big team. I'm guessing you're going to have a solid team with an organization that size, but it happened. How does it happen in your opinion? Is it just the idea that there's so much going on that these things can fall by the wayside? Or is this, in your opinion, inexcusable?
Man, that's a good question, Anthony. I would assume that he had a substantial team. All those direct reports having a different ownership of the different parts of the portfolio, the cyber portfolio. So, him having to receive various reports. So, I mean, it could have been a litany of things that it could have, NMFA could have been enabled at one point in time, but they perhaps were doing something in their environment that they had to disable it, or perhaps it was an oversight. I mean, you can just as well as I am, you can have the best tools, you can have the best people, and things are still going to happen. Unfortunate as it is, they will continue to happen, not only in healthcare and other verticals as well. I told someone at HIMSS, and I was giving a talk with Clearwater with Steve Cagle, and long gone are the days when the server deck was your four walls, and that's all you had to worry about was your servers and all your other devices inside that wall. Now there are no walls. I mean, the entire globe, people can access your domain from anywhere on the globe. And so I think it boils down to, there's just so many different things that can go wrong, and how do you address all of them at any one point in time? You know, the casinos, what was that, a year and a half ago now already? MGM and them, understandably, you know, 300 or 400 probably cyber department, millions of dollars in their portfolio, and still things happen. So I don't think healthcare has seen the last of this type of thing, unfortunately. Yes, regulations, yes, the feds are trying to step in and doing some things, but I think back to your point about blocking and tackling, hitting those major boxes, I mean, not good compliance, because we know compliance doesn't equal security, but ensuring that you're doing those things really well, and then having some checks and balances in place to ensure that you're hitting those, the big, what are the high risk items for your environment, you know, and those are the things that you need to focus on, and with the time and resources that you have.
Would you think that most CISOs, if you were going to guess, and we surveyed all the CISOs in healthcare, at health systems, and you were to survey them and say, what is your greater feeling about this incident, or at least towards the CISO who was responsible? Sympathy and understanding, or shock, not okay? Where do you think, like, you're looking at this, do you say to yourself, I get it, it can happen, I understand how this happened? Or do you go, no, this one, it just shouldn't have happened?
No, I absolutely can happen, in my opinion. It's just one of those things that, you know, the thing that keeps me up at night is the things that I don't know, you know, and there's so many different items. And now an organization as large as Change Healthcare was, you know, and then I look, is it just the CISO's fault that redundancies wouldn't put in place at the correct time? Did they have, you know, proper business continuity processes, you know, things of that nature? Yeah, so I would not be the one to stand there and put my finger in his eye, for sure. It's just the nature of the business. There's just so many things that can go wrong at any one point in time. And I think the bigger ticket item is that, you know, this is not an IT thing. This is an enterprise risk management function. And cyber should be falling, in my humble opinion, it should not just be an IT function, but it needs to be an enterprise function. And given that layer of visibility, healthcare today, unfortunately, CISOs really are not given the seat at the big table. They're still relegated to a direct report on wherever, it could be CIO or CTO, whatever the case may be. And I think there are not enough CISOs that are getting board level visibility. And I think when that starts to happen and they start to understand that cyber has to be part and construct of the business model, and not just something that's relegated to a subdirectorate under IT, I think that's when things will really begin to turn around.
I mean, do you have a vision in your head of an org chart that you think makes sense?
You know, some days I do, Anthony, some days I don't. Some days I think that, wow, would it be good to be a direct report to the CEO? And then it's like, probably not. What about the CIO? And most healthcare organizations I've worked with, or I've seen, the COO has a little bit, relatively more authority than the CIO, a lot more cross collaboration against a lot of other directors. Of course, CIO does too, but so I can see maybe there's differences of opinion. So, you know, I've seen it work both ways. I've seen it work very, very well under the CIO construct. And so it's, you know, it depends. And that's not a good answer, but.
Well, I think it reveals that it's not an easy problem to solve, because you want this enterprise view of risk. And so you need the cyber risk to bubble up to someone who's in charge of overall risk that includes all types of risk, cyber being one of those things.
Correct, yeah.
You know, but to pull the CISO out from under the CIO, then you still have to make sure you've got very serious collaboration between those two. If somehow they're not together on the org chart,
Well, to answer that, I mean, you know, part of my first 90 days is cross collaboration with other directors and VPs at the organization, right? And I've done that. So, you know, one of my main priorities is I need to make sure that I have a good working relationship with legal, general counsel, privacy, you know, HR, CMIO, those types of people, you know, rev cycle. And I do. That's one of the first things I do. So, you know, the argument that it has to sit under CIO, you know, like I said, it's not necessarily to me has to be there, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, it is a thorny problem. What's interesting to me about this change breach is that it seems like there could be there's a million windows. If you picture like a mansion with a million windows and you leave one open, that can do it.
And it doesn't have to be all the way open.
It's crazy.
You know what I mean? You're living right. in a glass house, and please don't throw a rock, because I may not be as solid there as I think I really am.
Yeah.
And you know, depending on the size of the team, I mean, healthcare is, you know, it's different if I have a 40 hospital organization and I have 300 people on my IT staff compared to smaller organizations that have two. You know, how can you properly protect an enterprise with two people on cyber staff? You just really can't do it. And so to me, you know, and other people in the organization, is this change debacle that's going on going to be the precursor to appropriate change?
Right.
And, you know, some people are arguing, well, is the feds going to get involved with this? Like, man, you better be careful what you ask for when you ask the federal government to step right. in. Because HIPAA has been here forever. OCR has been here, you know, forever. And it's still, you know, some of the issues that goes on there. So.
Absolutely. It's crazy, right? I mean, you, like you said, you only need a crack of a window open out of thousands of windows. So it's daunting.
Yeah, it's the thing that keeps me up. It's, you know, what don't I know?
Yeah.
You know, and if I do know about it, you know, now I feel responsible that we have to address it. And do we have the resources to put, you know, mitigating control in place or some of the tool, whatever the case may be, or do we accept the risk as an organization? So to me, the drum that I've been beating at, you know, over the last 10 years is that this is simply just not an IT problem. It has to be bigger than that.
Right. Let's go back a little bit. So top of mind is ransomware, which is an interesting way to put it, because ransomware is something that can happen to you. If ransomware is one of your biggest concerns, and it is for everybody, it's not just one thing, right? So, okay, our concern is ransomware. So in order to deal with that, there's about 15 things we need or to prevent that. So in order to either try and prevent it and then deal with it if it happens, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
So it's not like just ransomware, one thing. It's a million things. But tell me about some of the things that on the front end of prevention and some of the things on the BCP, business continuity, disaster recovery side.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. So it's like a twofold deal, right? So one, or do we have the mechanisms in place to thwart off, you know, the millions of threat vectors out there that are just trying to get in our environment, right? And you start with, if you have a DDoS service, you know, with your provider, and then you break it down to go to the firewall. Do you have the modules in place on your firewalls to ensure that you're doing what you can? Are you doing proper phish education training with your user environment? Are you training them on to be on the lookout? Don't click this, report this, you know, the whole education continuum there. And so the proactive approach to when ransomware, not when ransomware, proactive approach to trying to prevent that. And then I think the harder nut to crack in healthcare is, do you have proper BCP, you know, business continuity, disaster recovery, incident? On the clinical side, Anthony, you probably know just well as there's a lot of things that they do well on the clinical side, from downtime procedures to a lot of things in place. And I don't necessarily think that all too often we move that over to the IT and the rest of the environment side. And case in point, the Change Healthcare thing, right? Impacted rev cycle, so many. And why did it impact the rev cycle on so many institutions? Because they were single threaded, right, to Change. And so if they would have had some redundancies built in, the clearing houses or whatever the case may be, then they probably could have, help mitigate some of the pain points that they went through. So I think the BCP incident response, I think that's the other piece that worries me, that if I should have to say, hey, I need to restore some backups, have we tested those restores? And, you know, that's the confidence level that you need to have with your infrastructure and your networking team and your collaboration with them. So those are other things that, you know, that I worry about. So you're correct. And when you say ransomware, it's just not the first point in that entire puzzle, but that entire equipment string and our entire process of, you know, having to get things back up should you need them, instead of, you know, unfortunately going to, you know, charting with paper when Epic is unavailable or Shareware, whatever the case, not Shareware, but, geez, I'm having a brain lapse here. Yeah, like if Epic is unavailable.
Right, right. Have you done much work or much thinking about the interactions that have to happen between yourself, the CIO, and the users or the business unit or the clinical folks? You know, when you, if you were to play out a ransomware event, it might be the kind of thing where it's either someone in your team is alerted or a user alerts the help desk, hey, I've got this crazy message on my screen, right? That's going to trigger a whole bunch of things. You know, you're locked out of your system, call this number or whatever, and get your Bitcoin ready. So that's going to trigger a whole bunch of things that could happen in a whole bunch of different ways where eventually you're alerted, something's going on, you do your investigation. This all probably is going to happen very rapidly. And you're going to have to make a decision of, are we going to shut down some applications? And if you decide we're going to shut down some applications, there then has to be some communication to the users.
Yes.
With as much notice as possible. Like, we're going to shut down the EMR in 15 minutes. I don't know, something like that, right? Half hour, yeah, sure. 15 minutes, 2 hours, whatever it is. So where I'm really interested in is the interactions between the CISO, enterprise risk, emergency management, and the users beforehand to help people tabletop and think through that process so that they're ready. You're not going to make sure that they have paper. You're not going to sit here as the CISO and make sure they have paper in their drawers, right? Sure. Someone's going to do that. Hopefully they have to do it. Someone has to do it. How far do you take the ball over to them before they have to run with it?
Yeah, good question. So that's one thing, you know, we do, like other institutions, we do our tabletop ransomware exercise. We're doing one this summer. And so first thing we do, we break out that playbook and with all the applicable points of contacts in there. Now, beforehand, and like I mentioned earlier, the clinical side has a lot of downtime procedures. They're ready to go. Should Epic go down, they can chart by hand. They can do a lot of things because they train to that. So to me, though, and my part as a CISO is I've got to have that pre-coordination effort. I need to know all those people, you know, by names, you know, have coffee with them, get to know them, let them know that I'm there to support them. In the event that something does happen, you know, then we get on our emergency channel and we say, hey, look, this is the current situation. This is what we intend to do. We've sought outside counsel. We've sought outside yet, whatever the case may be. And we're going to invoke this. I am going to get my biggest partner in that was going to be not only the CIO, but the CMIO. And the clinical leadership, because this is going to, again, it's going to impact patient care, correct? And so we're going to ensure that all that communication is going to be on the forefront. But it's just not going to happen, Anthony, right when the ransomware event starts. This is some things that we need to train to. We need to pre-coordinate. We need to make sure that we get the right people on the call at the same time. I will say this as an example. I was at Scripps when Scripps was ransomware a couple years ago. And I was very, very pleased the way that the communication piece went off. There was no finger pointing. It was everybody on deck. And it's like, we've got some things that we have to do. And we turned to it and things got done. And so it would be no different here to getting right people at the table at the right time. But I think the pre-coordination and let people know that, hey, this could still happen. And if it does, this is how we're going to move forward with that. And so it's going to be my team's first ransomware tabletop this summer, since we're a relatively new team and the first time me there as a CISO. So I'm looking to not only working with that outside counsel to do that, but to cause some pain points for my team intentionally. I want them to better feel as close as I could get them to feel of what it's really like, because none of them have been in a ransomware attack or a ransomware event. So I want to invoke some pain points there to let them see how uncomfortable this is and how uncomfortable it will become. But however, at the end of the day, it, you know, you can still work through some things as long as you have the right attitude and the right coordination. And I work with the three C's: communicate, coordinate, cooperate. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that we always have to harp on, you know. So anyway, long-winded answer.
No, there. Good answer. So when you do this tabletop, you have to have an initial playbook, right?
Correct.
So
yeah.
You have scenarios, so you could run through, I suppose, multiple scenarios.
Yes, sir,
I
don't can.
Know how practical. I don't know how much time you have. I don't know how many scenarios you're going to run through, the duration. So I guess you do as much as you can. You want to get everybody together. You get a lot of people together who make a lot of money and are very valuable to the organization. You're taking their time away from what their job. So it's on you, if you're sort of running this, to make sure we accomplish the maximum amount in the minimum time that I have these folks. Because I can't say, once everybody clears their calendar, I can't say, you know what, this didn't go off right, let's try it again next week. They're going to go, Blaine, you're nuts, I'm not doing this again, right? Call me in 3 months. So you have to get it right. You have to have your scenarios planned out, and you have to have your steps. It's a tabletop to get better, but you have to have an initial playbook. This is what we think we're going to do. We're going to do the tabletop, and we're going to learn as we go through the tabletop. Then we'll make the playbook better. So any thoughts there about doing tabletops well?
Oh, yeah, and the thing is, I mean, if we can walk away, if my team can walk away, or even I can walk away and say, you know what, I learned some things today. There's some things that I had not thought of. And yeah, this is going to be our first iteration with the playbook, and it's okay if we get some things wrong. You know, we can't go in there with a zero defect mentality and think we're going to solve, you know, the world's hunger problem in one, you know, in a 3-hour tabletop session. The thing is that, are we learning from it? And once we have the ransomware exercise completed and we readjust, do we think we're poised 3 months down the road to do a better job should something really happen? Mm-hmm. So to me, that's the goal. It's letting them know how painful these things could be, but at the same time, it could be a manageable crisis. If you've got the right people, the right time, the right thought process, the right resources that you can bring to bear, and then end of the day, do you know who to call if you don't have the answer? Mm-hmm. I don't have to have all the answers, right? But I just know, who do I need to call that perhaps does have the answer? And if I need to bring in third parties, then you know what? So be it. We have like all healthcare, we have contracted services. You have outside counsel, you have insurance, all those things that want you to be successful. So I need to get those people involved too, to make sure that they understand what we're attempting to do. And they get it, Anthony, you know, mm-hmm. they get this. They do this for their clients, because they, you know, if I could, I don't know if this is the right thing to say, but would they want us to have lower premiums? Probably so. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, a lot of that is indicative of how's your cybersecurity program running? Are you doing regular and routine exercise and things of that nature? So to me, if we can walk away saying that, yeah, we learned something, we may have gotten some things wrong, but we're going to adjust. And, you know, I told my team just this morning, the plan is really becomes an invalid plan once the plan kicks off.
Yeah,
right. you got to, because you have to be fluid, right?
Yeah,
and 100%. You got to be able to adjust. And if we get it wrong, then let's admit that and let's do some things to get it right, and we move on.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't mean you shouldn't practice and you shouldn't try, but there's so many scenarios that the chance
you can what if it chance, to death, right? Yeah.
Yeah, you can what if it to death, and the chances that you've trained for the exact scenario that happens are very unlikely, but that doesn't mean you don't practice, right?
Absolutely.
Let's talk about duration. Well, a couple things, two issues. One is, someone I spoke to said when they went through this type of tabletop, one of the things that came to light was the business had not really thought about how they were going to communicate if their systems were not available. They still kept thinking they could use those to communicate. And it was repeatedly asked, no, how are you going to communicate if they're down? So, you know, really getting, sometimes what you're doing is, yeah, you're practicing for your team, but you're also surfacing issues for the users that they never thought of, right? So you're helping them almost prepare for life without electronic systems. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Because if you're, you know, if you're disconnected from the internet for a week, you know, and granted, you know, hopefully you have your internal systems up. So do I stand up a Microsoft Teams server locally and start communicating with Teams? Or do we, is the VIA network still up that I can get on a phone bridge for, you know, 300 people, you know, for for 2 weeks on end without hanging up. So really, I mean, that's part of the playbook that you need to build in there, right? You've lost the internet, you've lost X.
Yeah.
How are we going to communicate? How are you even going to announce that we've had a ransomware attack and get the right players to jump on the call at that first time? So that should be built into your playbook.
Hey, let's talk about duration. You mentioned 1 week, you mentioned 2 weeks, you threw out those durations. That's part of table topping is what, and scenario planning is, what am I planning for? What's the scenario? Is it a week? Is it 2 weeks? Because I heard other people say that things break down after a certain period of time. So you've done some planning, you're ready to go for a couple of days or whatever the case may be. At some point, your scenario or your planning may break down after a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. But that doesn't mean you can plan for wild, crazy edge cases that will likely never happen.
You're going to have to call it, right? I mean, yeah. I would think a week and 2 weeks planning would be sufficient for most organizations. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Change Healthcare debacle is, you know, that's going to be, you know, that's going to be a use case study for some time to come, right? 30 plus days easily for services down. But for us, you know, a week or two could be plenty duration. The thing is, like I said, the clinical side really has, they normally do a very good job of, if they need to start charting on paper immediately, then they can go to downtime procedures and they have to do that. They know to do that. It's the other things that the little ankle biters, if I can put it that way, that you may not know of, that would absolutely have to have internet connectivity. For them to perform its function. And if you have no internet because you severed yourself, you know, I think that's going down to the tier zeros and tier one applications in your hospital that are vital for business continuity. Do they have their own internal business continuity plans in the event of a downtime? If we lose X. And I think that's, there's so many of those. And we're, like I said, a medium sized hospital. And even for us, that's a daunting task. Yeah. To do some checkboxing and to, if you have, you know, an enterprise level BCP, it's really daunting to get that done.
Yeah. And you mentioned before the idea of restoring from backups. I think you touched on that. So that's another thing, right? So let's say you know, your scenario, the clinical side's on paper. Let's say you're on paper for a week. You know, what does that look like? Getting back up electronically, and then even contemplating getting all those paper records into the electronic system.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Who does that? Who's sitting there doing that?
Well, you know, is that going to be HIM that's going to be responsible for that, or you know, some other department does have to, they have to scan all that into the EMR. You know, and that's you know, that could be a third party coming in and doing that for you, which probably be a best practice. To do that is to ensure it's going to the right place. And then, you know, you still need to bring your EMR back up and do checks and balances to make sure that it wasn't negatively impacted. And the integrity of your data is still there in the state that it was when you left it. And so there's a lot of different checks and balances that need to come online. But, you know, it reminded me of a story a long time ago when it was an active duty Marine Corps. It's, you know, we lost mailboxes and, it's like, I told the boss, he's like, hey, can you do restore? I said, absolutely we can. And then I go tell my team, hey, we need to restore these boxes. And it's like, oh, you know, the restores don't work.
No.
So it's like, you know, when's the last time you tested your restores?
Right.
So it's one of those, it's, you know, we get so busy and, you know, but that's back to block and tackling, right, Anthony? The, you know, attempting to do restores of various mailboxes, you know, are we doing that consistently? Are we doing a lot of things consistently? You know, or, you know, consistency can work both ways. We're doing a lot of bad things consistently.
Yeah. And I think in your, you posted at one point, NIST is the way to go. So frameworks, right? So we talk about cyber hygiene. Cyber hygiene is adhering to a framework. There's a couple ones out there. There's NIST, HPH, CBGs that are just coming out. HITRUST, NIST CSF. Yeah. Hiccup issued by 405D, SOC 2, Type 2. There's plenty of stuff out there that you can sort of try and steer the ship towards. But you like NIST, so tell me your thoughts around frameworks.
No, I've used it since I got in healthcare, and it's just a standard approach for me. 405D is absolutely there for, you know, for, I think if you want a foundational structure. And I think at the end of the day, Anthony, that's the You know, I don't want to just keep harping on this, but it's the foundational, the basic block and tackling. Are you using a framework,
yeah,
you know, to build your cybersecurity portfolio around that you trust, that you're familiar with, that it works for you? And, you know, there's a lot of different flavors out there for a lot of different verticals, you know, and find the one that can work for you and your organization, and then do the grunt work. And start getting some things. Do a bona fide HIPAA risk assessment, you know, and put something in place with that. Because I think if you're gonna get, you know, Lord, you know, you have a breach, OCR is gonna come calling, and one of the first things they're gonna ask for is like, give me a copy of your last risk assessment, whether that's internal or third party. They're gonna want to see it. Now, granted, it may be 2 years after the fact, but I mean, Change Healthcare had OCR involvement what, 30 days after the breach. So, you know, I think you need to have some type of framework that you're going to rally the troops around and rally your controls around to do some checks in the box and make sure that you're doing your due diligence.
There's emails coming out today, May 1st, about practices are still down, despite what Change may be saying. You know, there's statements coming out. We're still a mess. Our finances are a mess with these physician practices.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, it's daunting. And we didn't even really touch on, we're almost out of time. We didn't even touch on the whole process of actually getting through the acute portion of the ransomware event, meaning your systems are locked. I have to call the FBI. We didn't even go through that.
And then the FBI is going to try to negotiate with the ransomware, with the threat actors, right? A lot of people don't even know that that exists.
But at some point, I mean, at some point you got to get them out of the system, right? So they're in, you get the flashing thing, send us Bitcoin, you're locked out of your systems. How do you eventually get back into your, so either you're going to pay the ransom or what?
If you
don't pay, what happens?
No, yeah,
you're
going to have containment, right? So you're probably going to sever your internet connection to make sure that no traffic can come back in or go out. Then you're going to find out what's been encrypted. If your server deck, you know, and all your backups are encrypted, then you're in a bad situation, right? But if you can attempt to do your restore from your backups, you know, then that's going to be your best bet. And if not, then you're going to have to, you know, you have to contemplate paying the ransom. And oh, by the way, just because you pay the ransom does not mean,
right,
one, that you get the key. And number two, if they do give you the key, that it's going to be a valid key. You know, because I've read things that, yeah, they were provided the key, but the key did not work. And the threat actors, well, that's the key that we have. And that's the key that we gave you. And so you're still SOL. And so, you know, it's just a hard place to be. You know,
so speed of response is a huge element here that could come down to minutes being important. Is that true? Would you say that's correct?
Yeah. You know, and put it in perspective, if you're a medium sized or small hospital, and you've got two people on your team, what are the odds that one, you're going to be able to detect someone's in your environment? And number two, you have the wherewithal to better do something about it. You know, chances are from those organizations, the FBI is probably going to be the one to tell you or some other entity that you've been compromised, right? You know, and then you're going to have to go out to the Mandiants of the world. You're going to have to go to the FBI and say, hey, I need some help. I need some support because I just can't handle this at my level, and which is perfectly okay, right? I mean, it is what it is. You have what you have. But the time that you can, one, the presence, and it isn't very often that a threat actor gets on your network and within a half an hour, you know that they're there. More often than not, they've been on your network for days or weeks, and they're doing their recon, right, of your network. They're trying to see where they can move laterally and find out what they can encrypt, find out where your premium data stores are at, and then focus on that. And then they invoke the algorithm to say, and then they deploy their ransomware email, whatever the case may be.
So the idea is that, or you could say from what you're saying, if you don't detect them until they let you know they're there with their ransomware notification, they've probably been in for a while, and they are not going to spring their trap until they know they have you.
Yes.
So they know. So once you see the message, you know you're in trouble, because they wouldn't have sprung the message until they knew they had you.
Correct. Until they're ready to go, which I mean, think about it. I mean, it's common sense approach, right? If you are them, I'm going to wait until I'm in a comfortable position to have my demands met. And so I'm going to do my recon. I'm going to move laterally. That's why, you know, domain admin accounts and all those type of global admins, you know, they're the ones they try to target. So they have, you know, unabridged violation across the network and they can encrypt whatever they want. And that's just the way that it happens.
And they've already checked for backups. Is that right? Or they've already tried to encrypt your backups as well?
Yes, they're going to look for those stores and find out. And more often than not, they know that you're going to have backups, right? They know that you're going to have a warm side, a hot side, whatever the case may be. And so they're going to try to get there because they know, you know, most of these people, they've been in IT for a while. They know that if it's me, I'm going to try to protect those backups because that's what I don't want to pay the ransom. So I'm going to have to restore from there. So if they encrypt your backups, then you're, you know, you're in hot water.
Oh boy. Well, it gives you the creeps, right? It gives you the creeps. It gives you a little shiver up your spine.
And it only, you know, I tell my team and, you know, it only takes one of these, Anthony, you know, that one index finger on that mouse.
That's all it takes. And that's why it's such a big part of cyber hygiene, all that education. I could talk to you, Blaine. I could talk to you for another hour. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to give you one opportunity for a final piece of advice for your colleagues on who will listen to this and hear it and watch you based on your experience, your career. What's your best piece of advice?
Stick to the basics. You know, stick to the basics, data hygiene. Know what you have and know where it's at. You can't protect what you don't know you have.
Right.
I'll leave it at that.
Right. Maybe air gap your backups. I don't know. Yeah. Well,
put them on thumb drive. Yeah. Put them on external storage, right?
Whatever. It's a scary world. All right, Blaine. Wonderful conversation. Thank you so much for your time today.
Anthony, I appreciate the invite and it was a pleasure being with you today and look forward to doing more of these with you.
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir.